Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm FPL Harry.
Well, Harry, we're about to enter a week of cup action, aren't we? Both the League Cup semi-final first legs and the third round of the FA Cup coming up next weekend. So the Premier League takes a little bit of a backseat until next Tuesday, which is when our next game week is. So it's probably a good idea to be patient with those transfers because a lot can happen across all of those cup matches. Meanwhile, let's talk about game week 20. How was it for you?
Yeah, with cup games, it is good to be patient with your transfers. But when you're on five red arrows in a row, it's not quite as easy to be as patient with your transfers. And you're seeing everyone score points and you think, I need them. So
you were saying you had a good Christmas coming onto the pod. You said Christmas was great. Red arrows, though.
Yeah, Christmas was lovely. Yeah, triple Chelsea as a Chelsea fan over Christmas has not gone quite as well. 57 for me this week, basically let down by Jackson compared to a couple of the other forwards. And then I went with Enzo Fernandez, sadly benching Ahmad this week.
Ouch.
Against you lot. Yeah, against Liverpool. I did start Bruno Fernandes, so I didn't really want to have a double up on the Manchester United midfield against Liverpool. So I'll take the 7 from him. I kept hold of João Pedro. So actually, to get returns from João Pedro and Bruno Fernandes in what looked like a really tricky week for both of them is not the end of the world. But outside of those two, it was Salah, captain, Palmer and Isak were my only players with a return who are owned by pretty much everyone else yeah. playing. But I feel like I'm in good company here, Lee.
You are in good company. I dream, Harry, if you're 57. It was my worst game week of the season. So thank you, producers of the podcast, for getting me on this week. Christmas was actually really good for me. I've had green arrows, 5 green arrows in a row in the lead up to this game week. So I've gone from something like, 800 or 900K up to 120K I was going into game week 20. My rank as it stands right now is 270K. So over double my rank this week. So that tells you how bad it was. 44 points. Really, really bad week. And when I set my team up, I was playing 5 at the back this week. And as I hit, as it approached the deadline on Saturday, I thought, that's not going to go well, is it? Why would you play 5 at the back? But I played Trent. I played Robinson at home to Ipswich. I played Gabriel. I had Lewis Hall at Spurs. I had Rico Lewis at home to West Ham. So all of those you could make, and I did make a case for all playing all 5 of those. 7 points they got me, Harry, between the 5 of them. 7 points. So yes, I had Salah captain. Yes, I had Palmer's 10. And yes, I had Isak 7. But as you rightly say, a lot of FPL managers have got those. Their ownership is so high that it really didn't have much of an effect on my rank at all when any of those 3 scored a goal. So I look around the rest of my team. The back 5 got 7 between them, as I said. I've got Jota and Jesus and Raya as my other 3. That's it. 44 points and a massive, massive red arrow. João Pedro on the bench. So him scoring that penalty and wiping out my double Arsenal clean sheet was a real turning point in my game week. So yeah, not a lot to shout about. But as I always say in FPL, you take the rough with the smooth and you can learn much more from your mistakes in any given game week than you do from your successes. That is the positive spin
exactly.
I'm going to bring to the podcast this morning.
Exactly. And I'll do the same. Over 5 weeks, I've definitely learned more about FPL than maybe I have done when you get green arrows. Should we dive in and talk about some of the matches? I don't think there's any other place to start than our Super Sunday game of Liverpool going up against Manchester United 2-2 in a game that everyone predicted. People were thinking Salah triple captain. How can I make sure I've got triple Liverpool? Is it going to be 4-0? Is it going to be 5-0? Is it going to be that by half time? And it didn't quite turn out to be. Manchester United turned up in probably, they've turned up in about 2 of the last 7 games, and they were Manchester City where they beat them and then away at Liverpool. So a bit of a surprise performance, a bit of a surprise result. And I think it's a boost for Manchester United assets, particularly with Southampton at home next week, right?
Well, I think, if you look ahead to Manchester United's fixtures, not only Southampton at home, as you rightly say, but then Brighton at home in 22. I think it's Palace at home on the horizon in 24. So 3 of the next 4 at home for Manchester United. So yeah, definitely having a look at their assets. You've got Bruno and you've got Ahmad. I don't think that's a bad position to be in at all. But the game at the weekend, you're right. Liverpool, as much as United were on song, Liverpool really didn't show up at all. I thought it was one of our worst performances of the season, in tandem with one of Manchester United's best. So yes, I'm looking at Bruno. Probably not going to be looking at Ahmad for that foreseeable run. But Bruno Fernandes, definitely on radar, particularly when I feel like I've made a bit of a mistake with Diogo Jota a few weeks ago. I think his early season form kind of lulled me into a bit of a false sense of security there. He's coming back from this rib injury. We know that, Slot is going to manage him back to full fitness. But as much as he's managing him, the other 3, as in Diaz, Gakpo and Salah, look, well, up until the Manchester United game, looked unstoppable, don't they? They look really, really good. So I feel like a couple of weeks ago, bringing Jota in was a bit of a mistake. So I'm probably likely to move him out going into game week 21. And Bruno Fernandes, yeah, with two shots and four key passes in this game, back from his suspension. You know, United missed his leadership when he was not there. And it was that was a real, you know, you can talk about as many of the underlying stats as you want, but his leadership was really missed. And he made a massive difference from that perspective in the game. So, yeah, Bruno bang on radar. I don't think defensively I'll be looking at them, and probably not in attack with Hoyland either. But yeah, Bruno's a safe option, no?
Yeah, I think Bruno and Ahmad are actually about the only two that I probably would look at. Someone like a Dalot or a Mazraoui, if they continue at their wing-back positions, might be slightly appealing, but I'm just not sure I see them being solid enough defensively to go and keep clean sheets in these games. So it's really, as much as this performance made me think that they are improving, that they look better, and they're starting to learn the system quite well, it really only leaves me with Bruno Fernandes and Ahmad as the two that I'd really go and buy. At Liverpool, I think there is a whole host of options, but I feel like I can start to put little issues with quite a lot of them that aren't called Mo Salah at the moment. So yes. Gakpo is the one sort of in that forward line who's starting a lot of games. I think that's 9 Premier League starts on the bounce for him. And he's starting to look really good. He played more minutes than Luis Diaz did in that game against Manchester United. Luis Diaz subbed off just before the 60th minute to only get 1 point rather than the second one. We were all watching that clock tick up slowly as he was walking slowly off the pitch.
True enough.
So Gakpo's one I find really exciting, but I think the key talking point this weekend has to be Trent Alexander-Arnold and his performance at the weekend, and particularly what that does with the return of Connor Bradley into that Liverpool team, and whether we should start to be a little bit worried maybe about the rumours of Trent going to Real Madrid, what that's doing to his performance, and whether Connor Bradley might start to take a few more minutes off him, or are we just overreacting? And actually, should we look at his 15-pointer that he got last week that we're all celebrating? And is that the real takeaway for Trent at the moment?
Well, the thing with that 15-pointer from last week, and I did urge a bit of caution when we were doing an FPL family live stream after that West Ham game, was that, yes, Trent 15-pointer, and I had him for that. So very, very happy. Nice green arrow off the back of that game week. But that goal was a 0.02 XG goal. It got a wicked deflection off of Kielman's head, didn't it? And it was a bit speculative, the shot, no doubt about it. He hit it well, but a big deflection. I think the keeper maybe saves it without the deflection. And West Ham hit the post, hit the woodwork, you know, plenty of times in that game. So on another day, that's a Trent 2-pointer.
Yeah.
And then we go into the Manchester United game and he gets the 0 pointer. Only one key pass registered as well for Trent. He really didn't have a good game at all. Because, you know, despite, you know, the assists and the goal threat and everything else, one thing you would say about Trent so far this season is, yeah, key passes and progressive passes and balls that get us up the pitch. But really didn't see a lot of that at all against Manchester United. So if we'd had a different result against West Ham, or had he had a different result against West Ham, followed up with a 0 pointer against Man U, I think we'd be sitting here, Harry, and saying, for sure he's a sell. You know, for sure he's a sell. But it's that 15-pointer that's still in people's heads. So I don't know. It's still a lot of money. The Liverpool fixtures are not easy, right? Nottingham Forest away and then Brentford away. Ipswich at home in 23 looks a little bit better, but a couple of very tricky away games. I don't know. I'm probably going to hold him because I've got other things I want to do in my team. But if you did want to sell him, I wouldn't be against it.
Yeah, so there's a defender that you've got in your team that I am eyeing up a little bit, and that is Lewis Hall. And I wonder about taking the money out of Trent Alexander-Arnold. The issue is for me at the moment is because Bukayo Saka's injured, I don't particularly feel an urge to go back onto Erling Haaland at the moment. I don't feel desire to get the money out. If there was one of these two looking really good at the moment, well, I suppose Haaland scored 3 and 2 now, but if there was a desire to go back to Haaland more than there is, or I wanted Bukayo Saka and he was available, I'd be more inclined to sell Trent than maybe I am at the moment. And maybe I give him a few more games, because as you say, the next two are not great. But after that, they do have Ipswich at home. They do have Wolves at home in a few of those after there. So there are some fixtures in the next five, but 7.2 when Bradley is back and maybe causing a little bit of a debate. And I suppose you've got cheaper options now. Kanate back in the team for Liverpool. He was one very popular at the start of the season before he picked up his injury. You save about 2 million now if you downgrade to someone like a Kanate, and you get the Liverpool defence, and it might just be a cheaper way into one of the best defences in the league at the moment.
I hear you. And yes, I'm not going to disagree with you saying that we're one of the best defences in the league, but those next two fixtures, I just mentioned it, you know, Forest and then Brentford away. And you've mentioned Lewis Hall. Perhaps we should go to Spurs and Newcastle next. I think it's a perfect segue because, yeah, put the money to one side, put Trent's price to one side, Lewis Hall's price to one side. is he not just a better pick for the next four, right? Wolves and Bournemouth at home for Newcastle, Southampton away in 23. So there's an away game in there, but it's Southampton who really are falling off, right, as we saw at the weekend. And then Fulham at home in 24. On the back of a run of, what is that now, 5 or 6 wins for Newcastle on the spin. Only one goal conceded in that run, and that was the Solanke header at the weekend. So, you know, I don't want to add to the Trent narrative too much, but yeah, I mean, maybe he's an out anyway to Lewis Hall. You know, regardless of the money, the Newcastle defence just looks better than us right now. The fixtures are better. The form's better. He takes some corners, Lewis Hall. I mean, what do you make of, let's talk about the game more broadly, Spurs versus Newcastle. What do you think?
Yeah, so owning only Alexander Isak in this game was a pretty terrifying watch for that Newcastle side. Right. No Anthony Gordon, who did score early on. No Lewis Hall. Luckily, Solanke did wipe out the clean sheet early on. But they just look like an absolute team on form. And I suppose the other one to mention is Jacob Murphy. He just continues to be the cheap option that we should all be looking at, but absolutely doesn't seem like I see anyone with him in their teams at the moment.
Why is that, Harry? I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. Why is that? Because I don't see that in the FPL community either. Everyone's kind of flocking to Gordon and not Rita Murphy, but that's his seventh start in a row now. You know, those X minutes, that sort of pitch time feels more or less nailed on at the moment.
It's starting to get a little bit better. Over the past three, he's played 85, 84, and 77. But the issue is slightly before that. There was a 59, there was a 63, and there was another 63. But you could say that those 63s have come in games that they've won 4-0, and he wasn't needed on the pitch anymore by the time he went and got subbed off. I do think there is just a slight bit more security because they've got a lot of games coming up, right? So they play midweek in the cup, as we've already spoken about. They play in the FA Cup at the weekend. Then we have a midweek round of Premier League, and then we have another weekend round of Premier League. And with his minutes already being maybe slightly less certain than you get with Anthony Gordon, that might cause it. But you do save $2.5 million now going with Jacob Murphy over an Anthony Gordon. I don't really plan on actually buying either at the moment. I've got my eyes on a couple of other midfielders who we'll talk about. But I think he's got to be as on radar now as Gordon is, because they're a better team when Jacob Murphy's in it. He's one of those players who does so much hard work. He's so clinical and composed in the box at the moment. And we saw it last season, at the end of last season. And there was talk about Murphy at the beginning of this season, and it didn't really work out. Some people went with him in game week one, but as a whole, Newcastle didn't click early on in the season. But now they're performing well, and he is a big, big part of that. So I don't think he should be just thrown to the side and everyone should look at Gordon, because his returns are just as good.
Yeah, his assist for Isak at the weekend with his 8th return in 6 game weeks, you know, as well as that, you know, slightly more guarantee of minutes on the pitch as well recently in the start. So definitely on radar for me. Super, super cheap at, what is he now, 5-1, 5-2, something like that. So a real budget enabler in that midfield. But I have to say, you know, again, I feel like not getting Anthony Gordon either this week or last was probably a bit of a mistake. He's only blanked once in 8 game weeks now. So he's definitely Isak's right-hand man. Isak is absolutely one to have. He's now scored, I think, in 7 straight matches. So if you've got him, and I'm going to ask you a captaincy question in a second, maybe for next week or maybe even the week after for Isak versus Salah. But Gordon, yeah, I mean, I was talking about, you know, Jota being a bit of a mistake in my team, and maybe I take him out for Bruno Fernandes. The other option, and there are other options as well in midfield, because we've got to talk about Brian Mbeumo in just a second. But yeah, Gordon feels like a bit of a no-brainer at the minute with those fixtures as well. Now, we've got to see if there's any repercussions of the injury that he picked up against Kulusevski and Spurs at the weekend. Took a big knock to his nose, didn't he? So maybe he's going to rock up with one of these masks on. I don't know. And whether that might affect him a little bit, I don't know. But 2.45 XG for Newcastle in this game. So really racking up the XG, really racking up the chances. And it's the Isak and Gordon show, ably assisted by Murphy, in my opinion. But it's the first two that I think I'm going to go to.
Yeah, so I love the idea of having Anthony Gordon or Murphy in my team. But as you say, there's a certain Brian Mbeumo who I also have my eye on. And because I've also already got Bruno Fernandes in my team, I suddenly can't own all three of those. So it's a Bruno Fernandes, Brian Mbeumo, Anthony Gordon trio that I'm going to have to decide which two of them I decide to go to. And because I've got midfielders in my team this week that I quite like in my double Manchester United, it's not really an entry point for me this week, which means I'm pushing it slightly further down the line. So I really like it. And if you need a midfielder to buy, if you need a cheap one, Murphy's right up there. And if you need a slightly more expensive one, Anthony Gordon is also there. They've got to be top 4 midfielders to buy this week, I'd say.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll move to Mbeumo next as the next option in midfield. Yeah. But we can't move on from Spurs Newcastle without a word on Spurs. It's the North London derby up next for them, followed by Everton away in 22, which feels a bit like that could be attack versus defence, couldn't it? And then Brentford away in 24. So despite Leicester at home in 23, which looks all right, and even they've improved defensively, as we'll discuss a bit later on, I'm sure, you know, difficult for Spurs, these fixtures coming up. They obviously get the goal early on with Solanke, but defensively still shipping a lot of XG. As I said before, 2.45 XG for Newcastle in this game. And maybe Newcastle could have had more goals. What do you make of them? Are Spurs still a team to target in terms of you want to pick your FPL players that are playing against them? Because defensively, they're still a bit all over the shop, aren't they? But offensively, they continue to score goals. And Solanke picks up 3 bonus points in this game. So not to be sniffed at, right? He is consistent.
Yeah, Solanke's probably the only one in that Spurs team that I'd consider looking at the moment, particularly because in midfield, like this week, Son and Maddison missed out, but that was a little bit of illness going around the camp. But defensively, they look pretty all over the place. And they had third choice goalkeeper Austin in goal, who I actually thought had a pretty good game coming in for his first Premier League performance. Yeah, but Solanke's probably the only one because I know he's going to play every week. I know he's going to be up front. He does drop deep, but I still don't look at them being consistent enough. And I look at those upcoming fixtures and I'm still not certain that I back them to win all of those games. And that's really what I want, to be buying into our team, that I know what I'm going to get. I know how consistent they're going to be. And I don't think it helps him that he doesn't know who's going to play around him every week. Is it going to be Maddison there trying to thread passes through? Is it going to be Son on the left? Is that how he plays? Is it going to be Brennan Johnson? Is it going to be Kulusevski? Who's it going to be every week? I don't think it builds security for Solanke to know what he's going to get, to build his sort of foundation. I don't mind it, but when you look at his price and compared to some of the cheaper options that you don't have to spend as much on, like a Chris Wood, like a Visa, like a João Pedro, like a Raúl Jiménez, I just struggle to ship out the money to buy a Solanke at the moment.
Yeah, that consistency is key, isn't it? Maddison benched for the last 3 game weeks. Now, there was some talk of illness in the camp at Spurs, wasn't there? So maybe that was the reason for the benching. So yeah, that consistency. And Solanke, you know, he doesn't know what sort of runs to make based on who he's going to be playing with. I think you're absolutely right about that. Son a little bit in and out of form, and I think I'm being generous there, to be honest with you. And Brennan, I think Brennan Johnson's having a really good season, but again, yeah, is he bench? Is he starting? We're not really sure. So yeah, a bit of inconsistency from the Spurs, from Ange Postecoglou in who he's going to start, means that it's tough to pick Solanke in FPL, I think. But nevertheless, still second for goals scored this season with 42 goals. So yeah. If you've got Solanke in your team, I don't think it's a panic. I don't think it's a panic. Let's go to one of those other midfield options that you spoke about then, Harry. Brian Mbeumo. I sold him a few weeks ago. I feel like that was another mistake. I feel like this guy is just a season keeper, the way that he ticks over. I say ticks over 19 points, his best ever score in FPL this weekend. So, so good. And if I, you know, analyze the game a little bit and I watch some of the highlights of this game, the big chances tally read 0-11. To Brentford. 11 big chances for Brentford, which I think says something about Brentford and Mbeumo, and we can have that conversation, but I think it also says a lot about Southampton. I think 5-0 actually flattered them a little bit. I think they racked up a 4.23 XG, Brentford, and now they are officially, I'm afraid to say, Saints fans, officially the worst ever Premier League team. They've got 6 points after their opening 20 games. That is the joint worst since the Premier League began. I think Sunderland in 05-06 was the one to join them there. So yeah, a lot to discuss on both sides here, both as a, you know, Southampton as a team to target with only 6 points in the league, and, you know, Manchester United coming up, and I think Forest after that. So, you know, your Chris Wood owners and Forest defence will be happy with that. Let's talk about Brian Mbeumo first. Let's do Brentford. Let's talk about the positives first, because 19 points, unbelievable return for Brian again.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like, yeah, there was a period of time where things slightly dried up and a lot of us decided to sell. And then seeing him do this and what Brentford are able to do, it makes me think, how soon can I go and buy Brian Mbeumo back?
Yes.
The other one that I really like is Visa playing up front. He's just 6.2 million. And you said they had 11 big chances in this game. Visa had 5 of them. He was top for big chances across the whole Premier League this weekend. So 11 big chances is great, but half of them falling to Visa. So yes, Mbeumo is going to get the headlines because he got the 19 points, but I'm really, really impressed with what I'm seeing up there. And I don't particularly have a route straight away to go and jump on Chris Wood as much as I might want to over the next couple of weeks, particularly with Southampton at home next week. But I'm eyeing up Visa as a bit of a differential once their fixtures turn. They've got Manchester City at home this week, which if you've got them actually is not to be sniffed at all.
Don't mind it.
And then Liverpool at home the week after, which is okay. Brentford at home do score goals. It's probably not the perfect fixture, but if you've got them, that's absolutely fine. But from game week 23 onwards, their fixtures do start to turn a little bit. They've got Crystal Palace, they've got Spurs, then they have West Ham and Leicester in that four-game run. And I really think we'll be starting to have a look at either going back to at least one of Brian Mbeumo, if not going with Visa as well up front. How do you think? Is Mbeumo the big one? Or do you like any of the others?
Well, I just like Mbeumo's talismanic nature. You know, the fact that, you know, they're winning a few penalties. He's on them. So in any given game, he can kind of supercharge his FPL returns by banging in a penalty, can't he? I hadn't read that stat about Vissa getting half of those big chances, though. So I do like, it's a great stat. I love that. Because yes, they're creating loads of big chances. But if they're predominantly falling to him and he's the one racking up the XG, then definitely he's one to look at. Both are good. Both are good. And again, there'll be a lot of FPL managers that look at Manchester City and Liverpool up next as the next two fixtures and go, well, maybe I'll just wait until, you know, Palace in 23. Maybe I'll wait for Spurs at home in 24, which on paper looks tough. But we know that Spurs, you know, again, have got their defensive issues. So a lot of FPL managers might be put off by the next two. But I don't think that I will be. I don't think that I'll be put off by that. Again, if I look at Manchester City, and we'll do them next in a second, gave up a lot of chances against Leicester a couple of game weeks ago. Gave up a lot of chances against West Ham. Yeah. I think 4-1 probably flattered City a little bit this weekend. And actually, West Ham outshot Manchester City 17-10. And they had three big chances each. So the underlying stats in the City-West Ham game suggests that that was a closer game than the overall scoreline suggests. So City, despite this kind of a City back narrative, and I think offensively they are looking a lot better, and Savinho looking a lot better, wasn't he, at the weekend? Defensively, they are still giving up quite a lot of chances. So I do not mind if you want to go to an Mbeumo or to a Vissa for next week for Manchester City at home. We know how good historically Brentford can be at the GTEC as well. And even Liverpool, you're right. Okay, on paper, doesn't look great, but we've shipped 11 goals in our last six games. Mm. And Konate still coming back and Trent, you know, not having a good game at the weekend. So yeah, I don't mind going into Brentford, particularly when they could be slightly differential, particularly in Vissa's case, because not a lot of FPL managers will go there over the next two.
Yeah, defensively though, I mean, yes, it's a clean sheet against Southampton. If you've got a Mark Flecken, you've got a Vandenberg, who did pick up an assist, a big 11-pointer for him this week.
And a goal ruled out as well. Could have been a haul for him.
It could have, absolutely. I think defensively, I still struggle with Brentford a little bit. And yes, they kept a clean sheet against Southampton. That's probably not enough for me to go investing in them. Yeah. It probably is the attack. Like we see when they play at home in particular, that is an absolute funhouse, that stadium. They are scoring goals, they're creating chances, and it is attack before defence. So if you've got a Flecken, you've got a Vandenberg, you may look to hold them, but I'm probably not buying new. And I imagine a very similar thing goes to Southampton, that it's more, let's look at their fixtures because we need to see who's playing against them rather than to see for any of their players.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Let's move it on to Manchester City versus West Ham. I touched on City a second ago. Are they back? Question mark. Are Manchester City back, Harry? I'll ask you the question and leave it there.
I mean, I don't massively think that a win against Leicester and a win against West Ham particularly means that they're back, but no. I think their attack is starting to show signs of what we saw earlier on in the season. Now, as I say, just scoring goals against Leicester and scoring goals against West Ham doesn't fill me with enough confidence to go and say it. And I think if you own a Gvardiol or you own a Rico Lewis, I'll be interested to know what you plan on doing with him. It is probably enough is enough for me defensively, looking at how they're performing. Like, yes, it was a 4-1 scoreline, but if you watch that game, you don't want any of their defensive assets, really. They were shipping chances to a West Ham team that didn't even have Jared Bowen in it. So you'd expect them to be a little bit weaker. But Kudus in particular had a very, very strong game. And actually, as he's playing on that right-hand side at the moment, he's going to be exactly where Brian Mbeumo is going to be playing. So is that going to be a great position for Brian Mbeumo to go and get chances, who may end up being more clinical than maybe Kudus was? So I think attacking-wise, Haaland at 15 million still feels too much. And I don't really want to take money out of a Cole Palmer, out of an Alexander Isak to go and afford him. But maybe Savinho is the make-way, the cheaper option into that City attack. That's two big hauls for him in those two games. I'm still not sure I fully trust him, though, because those were his first sort of goals in the Premier League so far this season. And I still don't think it's enough for me to go and buy him. But I can understand the appeal.
Yeah, 20 years old, first season in the Premier League, Savinho. And I do wonder whether at that sort of age, Harry, it's a confidence thing, isn't it? You know, the fact that for the first time in a long, you know, certainly since he's been in the Premier League and I've been watching him, he was beating a man for fun, wasn't he, against West Ham. And Haaland is going to feed off of the sorts of crosses that we got. I mean, even Pep came out after the game, didn't he, and said the sort of delivery, the sort of service that Savino can give to Haaland, you know, the fact that he's looping crosses in and he's finding Haaland rather than that kind of get to the byline low cross that maybe a Doku or a Grealish gives Haaland. That's what Haaland's going to want. His eyes lit up, didn't he, for that header at the weekend.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. The two of them, I think, do work quite well together. And that is Haaland's first double-digit haul since game week four, by the way, since September.
Wow.
But his underlying shots, his underlying stats, I should say, still not great. That's his sixth match in eight where he's had two or fewer shots. So despite this narrative that we're trying to spin around Savino and Haaland being, you know, the new Batman and Robin for Man City, it's still not really showing up in the underlying stats yet. It's still one that I want to keep an eye on, that partnership. But to go back to something you said a second ago in terms of City defensively, yeah, I mean, I don't know why I still have Rico Lewis in my team. I mean, West Ham at home, I thought, nailed on for a clean sheet. You know, I'll give him this one last attempt at getting me something. And we've seen in previous game weeks, he can get assists, he can score goals. Rico Lewis, I thought, I dared to dream of a double-digit haul for Rico Lewis. How wrong I was. And over the last 11 game weeks, I had a look at this. And the reason I chose 11 game weeks, because that was the start of their poor run, if you like. They're in the bottom six for goals conceded, expected goals conceded, and big chances conceded. So this is, you know, proper bottom of the table form defensively for Manchester City. So despite the fact we'll talk about Savino and we'll talk about Haaland and that narrative there offensively, and are they improving? And we think, yes, probably, but we're keeping an eye on it. Defensively, yeah, he's got to go, Rico Lewis. He's got to go. And I've had him for far too long, I think.
Yeah, and the fixtures, Brentford away and Ipswich away in the next two.
Tricky.
It doesn't scream clean sheets. They might be okay for the attackers, but doesn't scream clean sheets. And then it gets tough for them again. Chelsea at home, Arsenal away, Newcastle at home, Liverpool at home in the four after that. So yeah, it doesn't feel like, I mean, if you've got defenders, Brentford away, Ipswich away does not scream clean sheets the way that those two are attacking at the moment. And in terms of their attackers, with the upcoming next six, again, I definitely don't think I'll be going back to Haaland, and I don't think I'll be finding space for Savinho when he's competing with the likes of Anthony Gordon, with the likes of Eze, with the likes of Jacob Murphy, Amad. There's a lot of midfielders in that bracket, and I don't think I'll be punting quite on Manchester City just yet, which feels so strange. I check the Manchester City score every weekend and it doesn't do anything for my rank, whether Haaland scores a hat-trick or Haaland blanks. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, true enough. Yeah, I don't have the fear with them like I used to, not having them. In actual fact, maybe going on Savinho early and sort of banking and putting some chips on that, you know, that confidence that I've been talking about would be an amazing differential if he were to carry on the form. But for you, for me, the same as you, I'll be keeping an eye on that, I think, rather than diving in early. Talking of getting rid of Rico Lewis, one of the defenders that I've got my eye on, despite the fact that I have got a pretty good and strong looking defence, hence I played five of them this week and only delivered me seven points, but still looking to make it even stronger by transferring out Rico Lewis to Daniel Munoz from Crystal Palace. Let's talk about Palace against Chelsea, your team. I feel like, Harry, over the last couple of weeks, not having Munoz for Palace, I've got away with it, I think. I've got away with it. He is racking up some serious XG, this guy. Like, some serious XG. Four key passes and one very big chance created that Eze missed at the weekend against your lot, against Chelsea. And even in the previous game week, in game week 19, he had 0.52 XG. And I think, you know, if I remember rightly, he was in the six-yard box, had a tap-in and just it hit somebody's heel. He was very unlucky not to score in that game week. So with Palace, just two defeats in 12 league games. So Glasner's really got them ticking right now. We'll talk about their attack in a second. And Mateta, Sarr and Eze, you know, those three definitely on radar too. But Daniel Munoz, what do you make of him? Have you got him in your team? And if not, are you thinking about getting him?
Yeah, so I've had him for those two games I'm pulling my hair out that he doesn't have more returns. Him blanking against Chelsea and is absolutely fine if only Chelsea had gone and won that
sure
game.
Enough,
but
yeah,
the return you speak about against Southampton as well, how he's come out of these two games with 2 points each, I have absolutely no idea. He's basically playing as a right winger in a front four, if not even more central than that. I absolutely love him as an asset. He's playing so far forward. Crystal Palace are ticking at the moment. It's a really, really interesting debate if I was to show to you Daniel Munoz versus a Lewis Hall. And I suppose you've got Anthony Robinson in there as well. Those are the real three cheap defenders that people are buying in the moment. And trying to pick one of those is really difficult. Munoz is the one I've gone with. You've got a couple of them in there and you might be adding a third, which I hate to say, might be causing you some fair benching headaches over the next few weeks if you go to all of those. But Lewis Hall versus Daniel Munoz versus Robinson is a really difficult debate. But just looking at the positioning that Munoz has taken up for Crystal Palace, and they look pretty improve defensively with this sort of Lacroix, Marguerre, Chalobah back three that they've got. And that sort of chance they conceded against Chelsea was only really because Chalobah was ineligible to play. So Richards came in and Sancho had a fantastic bit of play up against him. But it makes me think if they had their usual back three of Chalobah in there, would that chance have fallen to him? And would they have actually kept Chelsea out in that game? Maybe, maybe not, because there were a fair few other chances. But his attacking threat for the next few games that they've got, I think they've got Leicester and West Ham in the next two. You've got to be looking at that as a potential buy. And if you're not going to Lewis Hall, he's got to be top, I think.
Yeah, he's so, so good, isn't he? And I looked at some of the XGs, because again, he's good for assists, I think, you know, as same with Robinson and same with Lewis Hall. But it's the goal threat, isn't it? It's that XG. And I looked since game week 10, he's got more XG than the likes of Foden, Son and Bermo. Rodgers, Bowen, there's a whole list of them, right? I did a whole kind of table based on, you know, XG, and he's ahead of all of those very attacking midfielders and forwards for XG. So when I say he's due, he is due, Daniel Munoz, no doubt about it. So I'll be heavily looking at him as my Rico Lewis replacement. Let's talk about your boys though, Chelsea in this game.
Yeah.
A bit of narrative that we had earlier on in the season and a little bit last season, I should say, was that Palmer, absolutely key and front and centre for everything you're doing. Five chances created versus Palace. That was his 20th return of 24-25. So listen, we don't need to sit here and wax any more lyrical about Palmer. A lot of FPL managers have got him. But the narrative was, yes, he's being really creative, but Jackson is being a little bit wasteful in front of goal. That's now one goal in seven for him. And again, I've got to, you know, is it a bit of a lazy narrative from me to kind of reel out that, you know, Palmer's really great and very creative and Jackson's wasteful in front of goal? Did you see anything different that would be counter that narrative for this game, Harry?
No, not really. As a Jackson owner, that's exactly what I saw. Sadly, yeah, one goal in seven, you said, and yeah, he absolutely should be having more. He had chances in this game. He had chances in the games that we've had against Ipswich and against Everton as well. It makes him a very difficult sell. Mm. It kind of reminds me, and I don't like the comparison between the two players because they are very different, but I remember a period of time ago when Darwin was in the Liverpool team and he was missing chances and we all thought, the haul will come. And it never did. And I worry that I'm going to keep Jackson thinking the haul's going to come. We've got Bournemouth at home, Wolves at home in the next two. It's going to come. And then it never does. And that's my concern with him. I don't see the worry about his minutes. It sounds like Nkunku potentially might be wanting to leave in January, not getting enough minutes. Mark Gooey, who's our backup to him, is also not going to be starting Premier League games. And we don't really play more than once a week until game week 27, which, ironically, the last time he got benched midweek was Southampton away. That game week 27 is Southampton at home. So that might be a concern further down the line. But for the next few, I don't see a minutes concern. I expect us to create chances. It's just his confidence feels really low and he feels like he's missing an awful lot at the moment. The other one that people have gone on is Enzo Fernandez, who I actually also have in my team. So that's my triple Chelsea, which has not been very favourable. And I think a big thing for Enzo is being the injury to Lavia. So that sort of coincided when Enzo Fernandez's points dropped off. And we're hoping, as Chelsea fans, that Bournemouth at home game might be the return of Lavia into the Chelsea squad, which would be a real boost. It will push Enzo Fernandez further up the pitch. It will actually probably benefit Jackson a little bit as well, because he's got more players in and around him, slightly more difficult to mark Jackson out of the game. So if you've got them, I completely get the frustration. And when you're looking at other options like Fernandez, like up front, like you've got Avisa, like you've got Solanke, like you've got Chris Wood, all performing really, really well, I get wanting to sell them. But I also look at the next two and think we will continue to create chances, and it will only take one of them to go in for Jackson that it may well open the floodgates.
Yeah.
From an outsider's opinion who doesn't own him, do you have any temptation to buy?
I don't have any temptation to buy. I just think there's other options in there. I don't have Chris Wood in my team, for example, and he seems the opposite to Jackson. Doesn't get involved in games at all, Chris Wood, except then he just gets a sideways pass and it goes in and he just scores every, it's unbelievable, and we'll do him next maybe. But if I had Jackson, I don't think you can sell. You know, Bournemouth, Wolves and West Ham are three of the next four games all at home. It's like, how do you sell a player that's about to come into that run? And I'm the same as you. I have Fernandez in midfield and I got him a few weeks ago on the back of that run of games where he was getting a goal involvement, either a goal or an assist every single time he got on the pitch. And then the Lavia injury happens, which is, you know, I think you're absolutely right with that, by the way. I think when Lavia comes back in, it frees Enzo up to join the attack and get more license to get forward. So if Lavia is going to come back, I do want to keep, I think, Enzo Fernandez for these next few. So yeah, as an outsider looking into it, I don't think I would buy Jackson now. No, but I wouldn't sell him either. If that's a good enough answer. I don't think it is. But one player that you might look to go to, Harry, is João Pedro. His first goal in eight, and it was a penalty, but only Salah and Palmer have scored more penalties in all competitions since the start of last season. João Pedro has got 11 and both of them have got 12. So maybe that penalty is the start of a decent run for him. Good fixtures on the horizon for Brighton. And if you are looking for a Jackson replacement, if you do want to sell him despite those fixtures, maybe it's João Pedro. What did you make of his performance? I thought he was all right in the nine, but I don't think that that is where he wants to play. I think he prefers to play in the 10. And I felt like he lacked a little bit of discipline in the nine. He was drifting wide and drifting deep against Arsenal in a way that perhaps you wouldn't want your number nine to be. Yeah, what do you think? Are you tempted by João Pedro now that he's got off the mark, first goal in eight?
Yeah, so I've had him for a while now.
Oh,
and actually, he didn't do very well for the first few weeks when I bought him. And past couple of games, I've been sort of wavering on him a little bit. But to see two assists last week and a penalty this week, I like him. I'm not quite as... He's not, you know, completely out of the mud. I still am keeping an eye on him. Ipswich away this week is still a nice fixture. So I'm absolutely happy to keep him for that. I think the other interesting thing is his performances over the past few weeks have not been that good until the past couple of game weeks. But he got the Kamsi armband with Lewis Dunk not being in that Brighton team this week, which feels like it shows a little bit of trust. It shows a little bit more responsibility that I feel like he did step up with in that game against Arsenal. And yes, he was drifting wide, but against Arsenal, you have to do what you can to try and get on the ball and to try and create a few chances, which maybe is something a little bit different. I completely agree with you, though. I think they miss a striker. They miss Danny Welbeck in this team a lot. And they are not the same when he plays there with someone behind him. And it might actually be, yes, it's great when the lineup comes out and he's playing up front. But actually, I wonder if he's just a better asset when he's playing in that sort of number 10 and he's running in late, he's making deep runs, he's harder to pick up. Whereas he feels very easy for the opposition to mark at the moment is the only slight caveat, I suppose, I'll put with him. But he's on penalties. He's 5.6 million now. He's very cheap. The fixtures coming up still remain good. And he's in there alongside Raul Jimenez as just a nice, cheap, long-term striker who plays for a team who are going to score goals and draw penalties at the end of the day as well. So I can't really put you off him, apart from I think Brighton are not as good when he plays in such a forward role.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. We'll do Jimenez in a second, but a word on Arsenal then. Ranked mid-table for open play XG per 90 this season with 0.96. So the likes of Brighton, Bournemouth, Manchester United, Fulham, they're all better than Arsenal in terms of open play XG. Yeah. We know what they can do from set pieces. We've seen the set piece coach at Arsenal get a lot of headlines, haven't we, in the way that they kind of NFL style their corners and the fans get excited every time they get a corner, right? So are they a little bit, do they deserve this set piece FC moniker that they seem to be getting Arsenal? Because they aren't creating a lot from the open play and they are missing some players. Clearly, Saka's a miss. Yeah, Odegaard didn't start in this game, did he, but did come on. So yeah, what do you think of Arsenal? Any worry over their assets?
Yeah, so I've got the double up on defence in Gabriel and Raya, and I'm fine with it. Like, they are still, I think, the best defence in the league in terms of online data. They still look really strong.
Data, but I'm not sure they're the best in the league at the minute. They seem to be conceding the odd goal, don't they?
They're conceding the odd goal, but if you look back at those games, they conceded that one goal to Brentford, which was a Brian and Bermo shot. They conceded that penalty against Brighton this week. They kept a clean sheet against Ipswich. They conceded one goal against Crystal Palace, which was that Sarr sort of shot from the edge of the box, which they would just allowed them a little bit too much time. They're not conceding an awful lot of chances. People are just being very clinical at the moment against them. Now, I don't ever want to sell Gabriel because every time I see them line up for one of those corners and he's still on the penalty spot marked by one of their attackers and he's got the run on them and it's coming in, I think absolutely I want Gabriel in my team.
Yeah.
And David Raya is the interesting one. There are only three clean sheets again this week, which means clean sheets are really difficult to predict. And I just think Arsenal do have the best chance of getting them every week. So I don't particularly feel like I'd be selling any of your Arsenal defence. If you don't want to buy new, then I completely get that. And they've got Spurs this week, which does tend to include an awful lot of goals. So I'm not that hopeful for my double defence this week. But I still like them defensively. I still think Gabriel's fine. I still think David Raya is equally as good in goal as well. Because one of these times, that chance won't go in that Brian Mbeumo scored. That Sarr chance will go past the post. It won't be a penalty. And then we look at this very, very differently. I think the attack is another conversation though, because I feel like they are not ticking the same going forward all the time as they had been. I think there are games like the Crystal Palace game where it all does go right for them. But I think there've been a couple of opportunities recently where their attack is not free-flowing enough. There was no Odegaard or Martinelli in the starting 11 if anyone's bought into them. I expect them to come back in, particularly because it sounds like Nwanieri is going to be out for a couple of games, which should mean Odegaard is needed for his creativity and Martinelli is needed back on that right wing. So I wouldn't worry about them. But I'm not certain on them creating a whole host of chances compared to when Saka was in the team.
Okay. All right, well, let's rattle through the rest of these games. Villa versus Leicester. Watkins bought in by over 380,000 managers in the run-up to Saturday's deadline, Harry. So a bit of a disappointment for his new owners in FPL. But a stat that I wanted to pull out was more around Leicester, actually, and the fact that they've conceded 28 chances from their left flank over the last six matches. So I did a bit of analysis into this. So in game week 16, they played Newcastle. Murphy got a 13-pointer. In 17, they played Wolves and Guedes got a 13-pointer. Salah got 9 points in game week 18. Foden, 6 points in game week 19. And then Bailey got the 9-pointer at the weekend. So definitely not just a team to target in Leicester, but a flank to target from a Leicester perspective.
Are you telling me Daniel Munoz is going to get a 13-pointer this week?
I don't want to, you know, my propaganda for Crystal Palace and Daniel Munoz continues apace with Ismaila Sarr and Munoz on that side. So yes, I am going to tell you that, Harry, absolutely. As I'm just trying to make the case even more for Daniel Munoz coming into next week. But Villa-Leicester, anything else to take from this game other than Leicester starting to get their act together a little bit under Ruud van Nistelrooy? Mm. Defensively did look a little bit better, but still a work in progress, right? Still a team to target, particularly if you believe my propaganda on that left flank.
Yeah, I think there's still enough individual errors from Leicester at the moment. I think James Justin, particularly recently, part of the reason that they lost this game was that Leon Bailey goal. I think the only thing to talk about with Aston Villa is Ross Barkley is their fourth highest goal scorer Premier League this season. And that two of the other highest ones are Morgan Rodgers and John Duran, who were both unavailable for selection in this game. And that only other one that it leaves is Ollie Watkins. And I worry, if you own Ollie Watkins, that Duran will be back from suspension now, that it may well be Duran that comes back in. I thought Watkins was good in the game last week. He was okay in this game, but I don't think he's really taken the opportunity to be back in that starting lineup by the scruff of his neck, which I think he probably needed to. If you've got Morgan Rodgers, absolutely hold, because this shows quite how vital he is to them as a team. But if you've punted on Ollie Watkins, I would be a little bit worried going into that Everton game, I think.
Yeah, I agree, Harry. So on to the last couple of games, Fulham versus Ipswich. There's not a lot to discuss here, although there was penalties aplenty, wasn't there? Two for Raul Jimenez. And actually, Marco Silva coming out after the game saying, Raul Jimenez in a really good moment and, you know, completed the full 90 minutes for the first time since October. So all this kind of narrative that I and others have been spinning about, well, I'm not going to get Jimenez because Rodrigo Muniz is there and maybe they share some minutes, etc. Jimenez proving again that he is the one to go to, I think, and 8 without defeat now for Fulham. So looking pretty good. Mm. Although that is 8 goals from 18 starts for Delap as well from Ipswich. So plenty of forwards on show there. The game I want to finish on, though, is Wolves versus Nottingham Forest. Chris Wood. Oh, man, where do I start with this guy? I just don't have him in my team, and I don't know why, Harry. How can I come on an official fantasy football podcast and not have Chris Wood in my team? 6 wins in a row for Forest. So it's not just Chris Wood. It's all the others as well. The defenders, I mean, Sells got a 9-pointer. The defenders getting clean sheets. Gibbs White popping up with another goal. It is absolutely mad that I've not had any Forest in my team all season, and I've got to rectify it. But with Liverpool up next, can you wait a week, is my question.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily feel like the best entry point. And if you actually watch this game, I think Strand Larsen was the biggest underperformer in terms of XG in the entire game.
How did they not score in that first half? Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, but defensively, they did look really good second half. Chris Wood didn't do a lot, although there was a penalty shout, which he actually could have got. And it makes the goal that he did score not feel quite as painful, because it could have ended up being 2. I don't have him. I did have the luxury of owning him at the beginning of the season when he was quite low owned. So he did a lot for me as differential then, but now he's doing a lot against me because of quite how many people do have him in their team at the moment. Gibbs White's an interesting one that going slightly under the radar, also competing in that sort of mid-price bracket. Is a lot of returns for him recently as well. So yeah, I mean, Liverpool at home, I find that game quite difficult to call. I probably would predict a Liverpool win, but I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't end up that way because of how well Forest frustrated you earlier on in the season. So if you've got your Forest players, I'd absolutely be starting them this week. Is it the week to buy in new? Maybe not. For example, like I've got Jackson, and Jackson to Chris Wood is a transfer which looks great on paper, but surely I can't do that this week with the fixtures that the two of them have got. So I'm going to have to watch Nottingham Forest again behind the sofa.
I love it. Surely that can't. We've been saying that for about 20 game weeks now. Surely Chris Wood can't continue this form. Surely Jackson is going to score at some stage. It's the definition of insanity, isn't it, Harry? Just continuing to do the same thing and expecting a different outcome. I agree with you. Although in 22, Southampton at home, I mean, if I don't get Chris Wood for the Liverpool game in 21, I think it's absolutely nailed on that I go into 22 with him for Southampton at home. I think that's a given.
Mm. I mean, Jackson's got Wolves at home that week, so I'll have to make the debate again next week. So let's see how we go. It may never be time to go and buy Chris Wood back, and I might regret it every single week. So let's go and see. Anyway, let's have a quick look at your team going into next weekend. Anything early? Of course, we've got a lot of cup games. We've got midweek EFL Cup, and then we've got FA Cup at the weekend. So I'm rolling my transfer again. This will put me up to a 4-3 transfer. So apart from the Red Arrows, the only positive I could take.
God, blimey, well
done. I've got
done.
Three at the moment, I know. That's about the only positive I've got over Christmas is although I'm taking Red Arrows, I'm banking the transfer. So this will put me up to
four.
Who
needs the points?
Double...
We want transfers.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll just cash them in at the end of the season and see how many extras I get. Fernandes and Ahmad at home to Southampton and Palmer and Jackson at home to Bournemouth. I'm relying heavily on those two, along with my Daniel Munoz 13-pointer that you've promised me during this podcast as well.
I've promised you, yeah. Well, I look at my team, and again, on paper, it looks all right. But again, I've got to get away from this I've got so many good defenders thing, because it's causing me a headache every single week. And to go and get, you know, Daniel Munoz for Lewis means that I'm adding to my headache rather than taking away from it. So yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I do have Palmer, I do have Enzo in midfield. Bournemouth at home looks like a good fixture. Rodgers will come back in after his suspension away at Everton. So yeah, the team doesn't look too bad. But I think given that the deadline isn't until January the 14th, which is a Tuesday, we've got a midweek deadline, haven't we? And as we said at the beginning of the pod, loads of football still to be played in the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup next weekend. So I won't be making any hasty transfers. I'll be making sure that my FPL assets make it through those games. Captaincy, Harry, interesting question for next week. I mean, still, like I say, plenty of football to go, but is it as easy as sticking it on Salah away at Forest? Because there's some other good options in there.
It's between two names in Mo Salah and Alexander Isak, who is absolutely unstoppable. I think he has more goals in the past six game weeks than anyone else in the Premier League. I think that's 8 for Isak and only 7 for Mo Salah in that time. Of course, Salah does add the assist to his game and get slightly more points for goals. It's not easily comparable, but those two, and it's an easier fixture for Isak, right? Wolves at home compared to going away to Forest for Salah. My only slight caveat is I feel like after the result between Forest and Liverpool earlier on in the season and them dropping points last week, is there just going to be that little bit of extra fuel in the fire that we have in Mo Salah at the moment? He's currently got the armband because the thought of ever taking it off him is not a nice one. But I can't promise it won't be on Alexander Isak by the time next Tuesday does roll around.
Well, I think I'd throw Palmer in the mix as well. I'm surprised you haven't gone there. You know, the actual definition of consistency over the last few weeks with Bournemouth at home, he's worthy of inclusion in your thoughts, no?
Yeah, absolutely. As someone who's owned triple Chelsea and it not gone well over the past few weeks, Palmer has been returning, to be fair, over that time. It does just put me off us just a little bit. And I have to say, Bournemouth have been very good so far this season. We didn't massively cover them today, but they have been very strong recently. And it does put me off slightly. But yeah, Palmer, Salah, Isak are probably the top three. And it will probably be on Salah, but Isak's probably second for me, I think.
Yeah, I currently have my bus captain on Salah right now, Harry. But yes, I agree with you. Isak, Palmer, definitely in my thoughts. And maybe even Daniel Munoz. The propaganda continues.
Absolutely. If Daniel Munoz comes in with a 13-pointer, I will be in your DMs. Yes. Thanking you very much for all of that jam. So a quick reminder that there is a very busy midweek. We have four Premier League teams with EFL Cup games during the week, and then a full round of FA Cup fixtures at the weekend, which does mean there is no weekend FPL deadline. There is not a deadline until next Tuesday, the 14th of January.
Yes, and once the League Cup first legs are tied up, listen to Jules, Kelly and Sam on Thursday with this week's FPL pod.
And if you haven't joined the mini league yet halfway through the season, you still can with the code Q7YCO0. Good to see you, Lee. Nice to be back.
Good to see you, Harry. Hopefully Game Week 21 brings back those green arrows for both of us.